Well, I'm very pleased to welcome the Fremantle Shipping News, Carl and Janine Bullis. Welcome along.
Thank you very much for having us.
Now, many Fremantle people will know that the two of you are beautifully set up in the National Hotel in the very centre of Fremantle, but that you're also connected with the recently opened Old Courthouse. Great venue, we'll come back to that. But so many other things, including the long table dinner that you've been associated with. Have I missed anything, Carl?
Probably. I think it's important as a business person that wants to do great things and succeed in business is involved in the community as well, and gives back where you can. So I instigated the long table dinner six years ago. We've done six now, so and that has become almost an institution in itself.
It's just an amazing event, and I recently did a podcast interview with Michael Pugh from St. Pat's.
Oh, right, yeah.
And obviously they're the major benefactor with their homelessness program, and it's just a marvellous thing. Janine, how did that all happen?
Well, it was Carl's idea, and he wanted to do a long table event on High Street because it would connect the hotel to Fremantle and, as he said, give something back. And we just thought it would look amazing to have a long table running down High Street. But the first year, I think we had 300 tickets, and we really struggled. We were selling ones and twos, and it was a real celebration each time a ticket sold. And I think it took, was it about 6 months? 5 or 6 months for it to sell out. It was quite a long time.
I know. Well, we only did it with 3 months' notice.
Right. Okay.
The last couple of years, it's gone to what was previously known as King's Square. I've never forgotten the name. Now, Wallyallup Court. That's a beautiful setting as well, I thought.
It is, yeah. It's we've lit it up, and you've got the church in the background and the town hall, and then those old trees. When you light them up, it really brings people together. So it brought a very different dynamic to the long table, because originally it was about creating a very long table, and we achieved the National down to the Roundhouse, which was sensational. Yeah, it's nearly half a kilometre of dinner table, which is a lot of walking. We obviously it causes a lot of disruption to do that, and we wanted to move it around. I think ultimately I'd like to move it around Fremantle and highlight different areas of Fremantle.
Well, that's a possibility. I must say I like the idea of leaving it in Wallyallup Court and having a central feature each year.
Yeah.
But tell me this, how did the two of you find Fremantle, and when did you find Fremantle?
Well, we moved here in 2001. We met in Hong Kong. We're both from Yorkshire in England, and we met while we were both living in Hong Kong for different reasons.
As are the Barkers.
Yeah. So we moved here in 2001 to open a venue called Carnegie's in the middle of Perth, and that operated for about 15 years and went through some lows and some very high times as well with the mining boom. So during that time I got a flyer from a real estate agent with this rundown venue in, well, not rundown, burnt down venue
in, right in the centre of Fremantle,
right in the middle of town. So to me it was very interesting, because it, from an economic point of view, because it had got a hotel license bang in the middle of town, next to a university, closest venue to the railway stations and all the public transport and the ferries and everything else. So on the paper it was a great opportunity.
But Fremantle people no doubt had a reputation for being good drinkers.
Well, it's a port city, so yeah.
A lumpers city once upon a time.
Exactly. And
so you moved in here, or took possession, at a time when it had suffered seriously from being burnt, not quite to the ground, but it was in a fairly parlous state, wasn't it?
It was. Somebody had started renovating it before we got involved, and it was. And then the banks got involved, and it was kind of in a limbo for many years. I think it was probably 9 or 10 years the whole venue was closed down for. Mm. So when we got involved, a lot of the facade had been done, but internally it was, there were no stairs, it was all scaffold, and we came through and climbed up the ladders and went up the scaffold.
The smell, I can still smell the building.
Is that the sort of the charcoal?
Yes, the damp and the and then going up the ladders, like Carl said, and the ladder up onto the roof through the turret, up onto the roof and seeing the views around Frio, and that's what ultimately sold us on the building, I think.
Janine, not long ago on the Shipping News, I also interviewed John Marsden, who's a great something grandson of Abraham Josephson, who originally, I think, almost originally in the 1880s or thereabouts, had his store on this very location. And of course now has a street named after him, Josephson, just off High Street, 100 metres or so from here. But it must be amazing coming to work, being here, living right in the centre of Fremantle. How have you taken to it? Was it something new? Is it different?
It was. When we first saw the building, we were living in the hills, in a beautiful house in the hills, and I had said to Carl, you will have to take me out of here in a box because I never want to leave this place. And then we came and looked at the National and we ended up buying it, and immediately I said, no, we're selling and we need to. I want to be in Frio now. And it's just, I park on Henry Street, so I walk from Henry Street to the National every day. And the architecture, you just feel so lucky living in a place that is as beautiful as this, and knowing that you're close to the beach and that everything's around. And the history, we've had people stay in the hotel rooms. We had a lady stay in the hotel rooms, and her grandfather or great-grandfather owned the building opposite, and when they renovated it, they uncovered his name. It's in the doorstep.
Barney Silbert.
Yeah. It's and so she had a room just above us so that she could look out and see her granddad's or great-granddad's name.
The Silberts, Barney, great-grandfather probably. Yeah. I worked for the Silberts when I first went to university in 1968.
Right.
Selling shoes in the shoe store that was there.
Yes,
then.
That's what.
It's amazing what you find around Fremantle.
So the history of the place is...
It is, and it lives in the way you've just described. Carl, what is Fremantle, as you've got to know it better and as you've renovated the hotel, and we'll talk about the renovations in a minute, what has the place come to mean to you?
Well, I suppose initially when I came to Fremantle, I always felt like I was coming on holiday because it was always the place where you came at the weekend to wander the shops and have a beer, or you came here to get on the ferry to go to Rottnest. So I always felt that Frio had a sort of holiday vibe about it. So I used to love coming into Frio for that reason. Now I live here, I don't quite feel that holiday vibe quite so much.
There's work to do.
There's work. There's a lot of work to be done. So look, I and Frio, you know, touching on the history, it's had a lot of years of becoming run down, and it was once a great city, and then it was all brought back to life for the America's Cup, and then it all sort of went downhill again from there. So I think it's an exciting time to be in Frio because there is so much happening, and there is a lot of investment, and people are starting to see the value in the heritage and the history. So I think it's a very exciting time, and you know, that's part of the reason for pushing to do the courthouse and getting that open and trading in what was a virtually derelict part of Fremantle.
Yes.
And I think that is very exciting to see these really run down areas coming back to life and bringing people back in again. You know, it's so exciting to see.
To the two of you, a question. Everybody has an opinion about Fremantle. You don't have to be a resident. You can be living in Wyndham and you can feel entitled to say what you think Fremantle's doing right or what they're doing wrong and what they should be doing in the future. Do you share with the angst that some of these people express? We get the periodic, optimistic, large newspaper article, then we get people with a lot of pessimism.
There's certainly very strong opinions either way, aren't they? No, nobody just says, oh, middle of the road, yeah, that's all right. I think I've completely lost my train of thought.
I think the queer people are very passionate, and everyone is entitled to their opinion. But there's a lot of passionate people that are doing things around Fremantle and the wool stores and all that. They're putting the money in, and even people like Andrew Forrest investing in Fremantle. I think it is on the edge of greatness, Fremantle. And I think there's just nowhere like it in WA, in the Perth area. You've got smaller little towns that have got a lot of heritage, but Fremantle's just got so much heritage. There's I think it is on the verge of something big. We just might need a little bit longer.
Well, there is a lot happening, and we know, of course, the port is always the subject of conversation, and the container port looks like it's going to Kwinana. The ships hopefully will come back and be coming in. The Port Authority is always planning something new down there. But there is so much happening. But let's come back to this very building, the National Hotel, with its own history. You've turned it into something of a boutique hotel along the way, haven't you?
Yes.
Tell us what you've done, and if someone were coming to Fremantle, what they'd find if they were staying here.
Well, I think, first off, I mean, when you know, there's a lot of money being put into this building, and you have to make that money work. So you've got to make the heritage and the history work for you. So it was about getting as much as we possibly could into what is a relatively small building. So we have, on the ground floor, we have the traditional style pub, live music 7 nights a week, great pub food, just a nice welcoming space with an alfresco space on the street as well. Level one, we have a restaurant, and we have those amazing wraparound Federation verandas,
which we should let the listeners know we're sitting in right now. It's a great space.
We are, yes. So we operate this level. Level one is a bit of everything, really. So it's function space. We do a lot of corporate functions, private birthday parties, and that kind of stuff. We operate a restaurant, so one of the verandas is specifically a restaurant veranda, so you can sit on the veranda and look down High Street down towards the roundhouse. We have the other veranda, which is more sort of boozy, smoking, sort of do what you want, very casual sort of veranda, which is probably one of the most popular spots in the building. And we put on events, so we just finished doing a month of Fringe Festival comedy on this level. We do
high teas, weddings. Yeah. Remember the Hidden Treasures was held around here.
Hidden Treasures we do every year. Yeah.
Yes.
So really a multi-use space. Next up, you've got two stories of hotel rooms. So they are boutique, very much playing on the boutique accommodation.
Just to prove we're in a working hotel with restaurant.
Yeah, we've got a kitchen. chucking ice around. So we have two stories of boutique hotel rooms. So the hotel is 12 rooms, all completely different and very high end. So we really got to get over the fact it's not rooms above a pub. These are beautiful, individually styled hotel rooms. So,
with a lot of local products and Port Jarrah Furniture, which is on High Street. Clint did a lot of the Mary wood that we have in the rooms.
Love Mary, it's a beautiful wood.
Yeah, he did all the cabinetry in the bathrooms is solid Mary.
Wonderful.
And he did all that.
Yeah.
And then a lot of the local items that we have are from suppliers in High Street.
So it's got a real Fremantle input and flow to it.
Yeah, I mean, that's our point of difference. It's a boutique hotel. You're not going to stay at a Ridges with 300 white rooms. You're going to get a local experience.
Yes.
And then to cap the building off, of course, we have the amazing rooftop bar.
Well, which one of you want to talk about that? You can both talk about it. It's the most sensational setting in Fremantle, if you ask me. Mm. You can have a private function there. You can just go up and have a drink. You can drink pretty much what you like. And you've got a 360-degree view over the rooftops of Fremantle, which, of course, is a a low-level city when it comes to height. Janine, how does it get used upstairs on the roof?
It is very popular, and it is used, again, that's used for weddings and for a lot of birthday parties, but it's birthday parties from 21sts up to 70ths. We had a 90th birthday party up there as well. It's got a very mixed group of patrons that use it. It's just a great place, and it appeals to lots of different people because it's to do with the view and the atmosphere rather than the music. The music is very much background music. So it's not, you've not got the big duff duff music, but I think it's got a wide appeal to everybody.
Yeah, the entertainment on the roof is the view and the roof itself and the vibe up there. So it's probably the most modern part of the building, but probably the most universal appeal because it from everyone from children to 90-year-old birthday parties. Everybody wants to go and just take it in. And I think you almost can't say you've visited Fremantle now unless you've been on that rooftop. And because you can see the entire Frio, all honest, you can see everything.
And you see Frio as it was from the Gold Rush building period right through today, because most of it hasn't been touched in that respect. Right. It's quite something. Now, let's just move on and talk about the old courthouse. With all of my connections with Fremantle, I'm able to tell you that I appeared in those courtrooms once, not as a defendant, as an aspiring young barrister. And it always had a certain Fremantle charm to it. And it's sort of been kept, I think, hasn't it?
I'd like to think so, yeah.
Yes. So tell me about how that all came about and how your involvement in it arose.
Well, it's the whole block, I think it's about 1 hectare block where the courthouses and the old police station buildings have been for 100 plus years. And they were bought by Silverleaf and the O'Brien family some years ago, and they've spent a few years stripping the asbestos out and getting the buildings into a shape that they can be developed. So we had a lot of conversations with Jared and Rob and
Murray Slaven's architectural practice became involved as well, I think.
Yeah, so we negotiated and talked about it for a long time, and when we signed on the dotted line and agreed to move forward, I looked around for architects. So we eventually chose Murray Slaven and his team because they've got extensive background in heritage restoration, and we really wanted to do the right thing by that building. Having done the National, we've seen the passion and love for the history. I do a lot of history tours of the National, and people are just fascinated to hear about generally the horrible things that have happened. No one wants to hear about the good times.
The proprietor here went out and killed somebody, didn't you?
That's right. Yeah, the first landlord shot and murdered a town councillor on the steps of the town hall.
We're
all tempted.
Don't forget, there's an entire mayor and group of councillors will be listening to this. You better say we love yous all.
That's right, yeah. And certainly nobody in today's council.
So what were you hoping to do, if it's the case, different at the old courthouse compared with this? I mean, plainly it's a different part of town, although it's close by.
Well, it had a lot of different natural attributes. So obviously the courtrooms themselves with the 6 metre high ceilings, very imposing spaces. But probably, you know, almost more so is that huge garden space that, you know, it's a CBD with the most beautiful garden. And I don't know how old those peppermint trees are, but they're so well established, and they create a great breeze, you know, the breeze blowing through the trees and just provides some coolness.
It's quite magical. You know, sometimes in New York City you find these little enclaves tucked away. They're privately owned, you need a key to get into them. But this is in the centre of Fremantle. It's well-treed, it's got old buildings around about it, and it's got certain privacy to it.
It has, yeah. It's got surrounded by heritage walls, really, so you can't knock those over. And then coupled with the trees, it does give a lot of privacy. So we built a modern pavilion in there to to create some, you know, some atmosphere, and it's designed with open glass windows and a wraparound veranda, so it creates that flow out from the garden inside. And then it's almost like having two venues, because we've got the old courthouses and then we've got the modern addition on the side with a beautiful garden. So well, we're really playing with our garden to the family market. It's just such a natural.
I was just going to ask about that. Janine, are there different demographics? The answer's probably obvious for the National and the courthouse.
I think there are. I think the garden is the court to the courthouse, the same as the rooftop is to the rooftop is to the National. You get a real mixed group of people in the garden as you do on the rooftop. And then the pavilion, you get a lot of families, and because that is quite quite an informal space, and the kids, you can be in the pavilion. We were there yesterday having lunch, and there was a family having lunch in the pavilion, but the kids were running out on the garden outside, and the parents were keeping an eye on them. And then inside, you tend to get a possibly slightly older group. So I think the people that inside the courthouse are slightly different. But it's the same as the National. You get different demographics on different levels.
And tell me this, fascinated to know the answer, the different demographics, different genders, what are people drinking these days?
Swanee D. Everybody's drinking Swan Draft. It's probably by far our biggest selling beer in both venues.
Wow.
We would sell probably three times as much Swan to the next best selling beer.
And what is that? Is it a West Australian traditional thing? Is it something people do when they come to Frio? They want something very local?
I think if Lion, who owned the brand, knew what the secret was, they would bottle it. I think it's a well established local brand. So the old fellas drink it, and it's also because they don't do any marketing for that brand either, so it's become fashionable. It's become fashionable with the student end of the market and the younger crowd. And I suppose it's just a generally easy drinking lager style beer, really. So.
Now, are we talking men, Janine, or do women drink beer in the same quantities, you think?
No, I think gin is a big.
Gin is the thing. Freemantle's been overrun by gin palaces again.
Yes, it has. But at the courthouse, we've got. Tatarang gin is our house poured gin, which is owned by Andrew Forrest, and it's a locally produced gin. It's not a Fremantle gin, but it is a Perth gin, and it is beautiful. It's native botanicals that go into the Tatarang gin, and it just, if you taste it next to, because we did a lot of tastings.
It's very hard work sometimes.
You seem to be fessing up here, Janine.
Yeah, if you taste it next to, I think we were trying at one of the brands that's got the bright coloured, there was a pink gin and a yellow gin, and then there was this Tatarang gin, and they tasted like candy floss, and then you have the Tatarang gin, and it's just a beautiful, it's just smells delicious, and it tastes delicious. It is a really lovely gin.
There's something I've noticed that goes with gin, it's tonic.
Yes.
It also seems to be blossoming, to use an expression. There seems to be so many different little spot-shaped bottles and bigger bottles and different colours.
I think Fever Tree recently made the news because they overtook Schweppes. I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure Fever Tree is now the biggest selling gin.
Amazing.
Rather than Schweppes.
The tonic. And is that a gender thing? I mean, I love my gin and tonic, I have to say, but is it a slow drink that a woman would have because she doesn't want to drink a lot, or how does that work?
No, I think it works for both sexes.
Yeah.
It's just an easy drink, and there's, like you mentioned, there's been a massive, probably 10 years ago, you might sell two bottles of gin a month. Now you probably sell them in a lunchtime. So I think it's so versatile. You can mix it with fruits. You can, it's a nice long drink on a hot day. Lots of ice in it. There's a lot of ways to enjoy it. So
I've just finished reading a book that's about to come out through Fremantle Press, which will have its own separate interview and its own review. So I won't go into it in detail. But it has many parts of it in the north of England. People have found their way living in the establishment up on the hill behind us in the late 19th century. But I'm left with the impression that everyone, at least in the north of England, was drinking gin, like it really was going out of fashion in
the
19th century.
As well, yeah.
And what?
The babies.
Mother's ruin, isn't it?
Ah.
Yeah.
Tea in trouble, give them some gin.
Give them some gin. So it's got a long and venerable history.
Yes, but now it's so refined and it's just...
It's bloody good.
I think we've got 18 types of gin.
And you don't give it to babies anymore.
No, we don't give it to...
You don't admit to it anyway. Now, how did you two get into the hospitality industry? It's fascinating how people get into their careers.
I can give you a very long story. I went into hospitality when I left school, basically, as an 18-year-old living in the north of England. I wasn't really drinking gin in those days, but I got into hospitality then, and I moved around the UK. I did trainee hotel managing with a couple of groups, and my last job in England was managing the concourse at Wembley Stadium. So you would have 34 bars, and you would have to...
Two types of beer.
Yeah, well, it's all bottled, actually. so you'd be flogging pies and beers, and you'd have 70,000 people come in, clear the whole lot out in 4 hours, and then you'd spend 6 or 8 weeks refilling them all to do it all again.
So did you go through the process of being in a small boutique pub out in the country somewhere to then working for a Wembley Stadium sort of organisation? Did you go through various stages of hospitality?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I guess hospitality is such a versatile and changing industry. There's so many facets to it. So I was in hotel management, but, I'm easily bored, which is why we end up building or renovating buildings, I think. So I flitted around a bit, and I just ended up working for a catering company that had the contract we did Lord's Cricket Ground, the Oval, Royal Festival Hall in London, places like that. So I just ended up working for them. And then in the end, I left England altogether because hospitality was such a badly paid industry, very demanding, long hours, hard work. I ended up in Amsterdam for a year, working in 5-star hotels. Then I moved to Hong Kong because I had a friend there, and I then took over running a company called Carnegie's, which is what brought us it took us all over Asia and brought us to Perth in the end. And as I was embarking on that career, I met Janine in a bar that I was managing in Hong Kong. She was a barfly.
And how did you, Janine, get into the
just through
business?
The National Hotel.
Just through National Hotel. So your lived experience in hospitality is right here.
Yes. Well, yes, I've worked in a lot of bars as a student. And backpacking.
Yes.
A lot of bars. But,
experience on each side of the bar counter, you might say.
Yes,
And what have you learnt? I mean, if you had to give a 5-minute TED talk about what I've learnt in running the National Hotel with Carl, what's it boil down to? Is it contrary to your usual experiences? You have to become more patient. You learn skills and virtues you didn't know you had.
You do, yes, and you do have to bite your tongue a lot. But I enjoy working in the National just because it's so different. There's so much going on. I deal with a lot of different facets to the business, and every day is different. We've got the art gallery, the Staircase Art Gallery, which I've started organising. We're just in the middle of working up a new exhibition. That's great. So you can look at the art as you're going up to the rooftop. And running the hotel, and you meet so many different people. And I do the accounts and deal with functions. And there's just a lot of different things that... And I enjoy... I still don't know what I want to do with my life. I've never had a burning ambition the same as Carl. I just go along with what's happening.
Well, that's three of us.
Yes.
We'll eventually work it up.
Yeah, and that's what... We've got a 17-year-old daughter who keeps saying, I don't know what I want to do with my life. I'm saying, well, I don't know what
Tell
I want
not
to do
to worry.
With mine
either. Take a gap.
You can get a bar job. That's what you need.
We've got a 15-year-old daughter as well, actually, who's going to start working at the courthouse clearing dishes next weekend. Our 17-year-old is a housekeeper here. So it's nice. They're both...
That's a lovely to hear that sort of family business.
Yeah.
And... So coming back to Fremantle and having been here, how many years is it now since you took on the National Hotel?
It was 2012, so it's 10 years.
10 years. Mm-hmm. And do you have a sense, and we touched on this earlier about where Fremantle's going, there is a lot happening. Mm-hmm. People often don't see the fruits of what's happening now for another 5 or more years. But what do you think will be happening in Fremantle in another 10 years?
I think there's going to be a lot more development. And in fact, it's almost we've got to see through to fruition everything that is in the pipeline. So there's still there's massive developments down at the Italian Club, all around the courthouse area. There's greater plans to turn that whole area into the convict quarter, as we're calling it. So that will almost become a destination within Fremantle itself. And then who knows where the port's going, but there's obviously plans afoot to change that. But they could be longer than 10 years, I think. But I think, I just think that Freo's got so many natural attributes that you can't replicate, really, being a port city with a beach in the town centre. I think it's the only town centre beach in Australia.
Beach bathers beach, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. And it's just a short walk down the street and you're on the beach. So it's got the community, it's got the heritage, it's just got so many things going for it.
Once COVID has run its course and we can get back to things like the Street Performers Festival, that is an amazing event. And I think to have more of those, to have Fremantle known as a festival place, that would work really well. Once all the infrastructure's back in place and the wool stores is back and I think that there could be a lot going on with that sort of thing.
We've seen a number of proposals, and a number of them presumably will come to fruition, with hotels, apartment accommodation. Hospitality seems to be coming bigger and bigger. Mm-hmm. Some people don't want to see yet another bar. Perhaps the National Hotel doesn't either. But it does seem that this is its immediate future, doesn't it? That it's going to be a place where people come. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a place to eat and drink, just as it is now, an entertainment precinct.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, retail is a very important part of Fremantle, but it is, I think retail on the whole has been changing in how they operate with all the online presence and delivery services. So I think it's still crucial that Fremantle keeps that that boutique element to it. I mean, every town, you need more than one reason to come. But I mean, I've just described a number of them, which are beaches and heritage and everything else that goes with it, and the community. But food and beverage is no doubt a growing area. But if it brings people into the town and they spend their money, then surely that's a good thing.
Do you know, I'm surprised there aren't more specialty shops for people, for women, for men in Fremantle. Do you think that's a bit of a surprise?
I think it's a shame that there are so many empty shops. And if you look at the shops on High Street, there are some amazing shops on High Street. So I think High Street, it has still got a couple of empty spaces, but High Street is doing very well. But if you look at in the mall and down some of the other streets, it is a shame that there aren't more shops open. And we definitely need something like Coles, which is obviously not coming back for a couple of years.
Yes, you can't really buy too easily a grocery list in Fremantle.
No,
at the moment.
Or anything. A lot of the basics aren't covered, but there are just some beautiful artisan stores.
I think that will change though. It needs more population. More people living in and around the centre, and when you've got that sort of core level of people, then there are people to visit the butchers and the bakers and all of the other little artisan specialist stores. But I think as more people come to Freo, which they are very clearly doing, it will create the opportunity, because anybody who's going to operate a business has got to be confident of the future and the viability of it before you throw your money in and start trading.
Something we sort of touched on and in a sense don't mention is the world as it now is. We're in the third year of a pandemic with COVID. It's affected the way we live, the way we work, and obviously it's affected business, and particularly hospitality businesses. In a nutshell, how have the last couple of years been, and what's your present outlook? I suppose you can only have a sort of a a tentative outlook at the moment, because we don't know exactly what the rules are.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, we've certainly escaped the worst of it in Western Australia so far. And the bulk of the last 2 years have actually been very healthy, because people have been spending on food and beverage because they've not been travelling, and disposable income seems to be not a problem. So business hasn't been too bad. You know, the accommodation side of it has been slower, but it's been very weekend centric. So we're still having a full hotel at the weekends because people are coming to play in Fremantle and enjoy themselves. I think the short term future is quite scary, because the virus spreads into the community, with the last few weeks we've seen a lot of hesitancy from people from going out. And I certainly think the next few months we're going to see an awful lot more of that. So it's going to be, I think, potentially a very tough 6 months ahead. But I think once we get through that, then people will rebound and get back to living with the virus.
Mm. Janine, it's sort of a sociological question in a way, with a 15 and a 17-year-old daughter. Do you think the kids at the moment are starting to see the world differently? We may not know till we can debrief them in 10 years' time, I suppose. Are you noticing anything?
No. I think, like Carl said, I think we've been lucky in Western Australia. Both our daughters are still at school, and they have to wear masks at school now. But I think they haven't been touched so much by, as if Melbourne or with the shutdown. I think I was talking to a friend who's recently had a baby, and I think that they, when they're going out and they're not seeing people smiling and they're not seeing people's faces, I think that could have a serious effect on young minds.
Except that there's a new place for eyes. You have to suddenly take in people's eyes, and people's eyes start laughing and talking to you. That's like they never did.
Yeah.
It has to be, you know, a silver lining here.
Yes, I do feel quite sorry for people with children.
Let's come back as we head towards the end of this discussion to, in a sense, where we started, and that is about the wonderful initiative with the long table dinner, which benefits ultimately the homeless of Fremantle. Fremantle's a place where you can walk around, and homeless people in many respects are more visible than they are in many other places, because we're a compact city. This place is obviously attractive to everybody, including people who are homeless. And I'm lucky occasionally I sit and chat to people who are sitting begging, and talk to them about what's going on. Here in the centre of Fremantle, you must see a little more than the usual city residents and outer city residents do of the homeless. And then you've had this response where you became supportive. Tell us about how that happened and what you've got out of it.
Well, I think it's certainly opened my eyes a lot more. I mean, initially the long table for me was about the challenge of creating a long table dinner down the middle of High Street and just creating a different event. So I realised in order to be able to shut the streets down and do that I needed to partner with a charity. So I went out and I wanted to pick a very much a Fremantle charity, and St Pat's was screams that, because it's centred here. And I think once we did the first event together, that I started to understand a lot more about what they did and what an amazing difference they make to people's lives. Just, I mean, I'm sure you've been around St Pat's yourself and seen the dentist's yeah, it's like a full-on modern dentist room just in the middle of this old building. It's incredible. But all the support they put out there. So it kind of back to what I said originally, I think, you know, if you're a business person in a town, you have a responsibility, a social responsibility to give back where you can and to make a difference. And like you say, we are impacted sometimes negatively by antisocial behaviour in the streets around the National. So it's nice to try and, you know, that's such a complex issue, I wouldn't have a clue how to go about it. So you you try and support people who do. So and that's how St Pat's, we got involved with St Pat's, and the dinner has grown amazingly. With the Core House, we've kind of gone a different route. We have a dead tree, we've painted it blue, so we're working with the Blue Tree Project to try and raise funds for them to help them.
Which is a mental health initiative.
Absolutely. So it, you know, mental health, particularly in these times of pandemics, is more on the forefront than at any time, I think. So so again, we try and link that business with another initiative which is equally important.
Well, this has been a lovely chat. When you wander around Fremantle, as we do draw things to a close, do you have a favourite walk? Is there something you like to go and stand in front of, or is there a place you like to sit and contemplate?
I like off High Street. I love Pakenham Street and Henry Street.
Yes.
I think they're just beautiful. And on Henry Street, they're renovating the outsides. They've done one building, or they've almost finished one red brick building. They've stripped all the paint off it, and they're just starting on the over the road from that, doing another one. And it's amazing the difference it makes. But I also like on Cliff Street at the end, Slavin Architects designed that the MSC building.
It's absolutely fantastic, the Mediterranean Shipping Company.
Yes.
It was interesting. It was one of those developments that didn't polarise people, but it invited different reactions. I think it works so well.
I think that's an amazing building. So to have the heritage building, and then that's a brand new building, but it does fit in so well with what's going on.
And you, Carl, do you have a spot?
For me, I have to say the rooftop of the National, because when the pandemic first took hold and we went into lockdown across the whole state, and well, the whole country, it was a terrifying time, and I still remember the day we had to sit down and just stand down our entire staff. You know, we had 40 odd staff, we had to stand them all down. And you know, it almost brought me to tears, because it was so emotional, and it was so unknown. We didn't know how long, you know, is this, we were told 6 months or 12 months that we could just be shut down, and you sort of,
it would be a vaccine and we'd all go back to work.
Yeah. Well, but you see your entire business life flashing before your eyes, because there's so much money involved, you know, and there's so much debt and banks and everything else. I found that going up onto the roof when there was nobody else around, and I think I did an Instagram video of watering the plants, just going up there and keeping the plants alive, and just looking across Fremantle, and it was just deserted and empty.
And we were finishing off the half-drunk bottles of wine. Take half a bottle
up. I've always wondered what happens to the bottles of wine.
we couldn't sell it, so it would have just gone off. So, you know, somebody had to drink that. So
it just reminded me, you may know the song. If you don't, you should get it and go up on the roof and listen. It's by J.D. Souther, and it's called Up on the Roof. Up on a Roof. Beautiful song. It has that Californian Eagles type sound to it. Look, it's wonderful meeting the two of you and talking about Fremantle, talking about the National, the new venture at the old courthouse, up on the roof, the long table. Congratulations on what you've done, and let's hope you enjoy doing it as much as you obviously have for the next 10 years.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks.